Well, hello and welcome back to the Sensory Reform Podcast. Pastor Zach here, and this week we are continuing our series in the practice of Christian hospitality. And I'd like this week to spend some time reflecting upon some of the ways that some of the church fathers implemented the teaching of Holy Scripture with respect to hospitality. Rather than jumping to our own modern application, I think it's oftentimes very useful to think about how people from other generations interpreted and applied texts, and to do that first, in order that we're not jumping to conclusions and we're not missing something. And so just to begin, let me direct some of our attention to a PhD dissertation from a scholar named Andrew Archerberry, who did his PhD work on Jewish, Greek, and Christian hospitality in the ancient world. His dissertation title is Entertaining Angels, Early Christian Hospitality in its Mediterranean Setting. It's a work that I found to be quite helpful on this topic, as it helps us to see not merely what is ancient hospitality like, but how was Christian hospitality unique. And so he defines hospitality, similarly to how we have already done so in this series, as the act of assisting one or more travelers for a limited amount of time. He calls it a fundamental moral practice. And so right off the bat here, we can see that this approach to hospitality is not exactly the same as what we would observe today in Western society, especially, because in our day, if somebody's traveling, they get a hotel, they get a bed and breakfast, an Airbnb or whatever. Because we have more wealth in our day and those kinds of amenities are available, it's rare that you ever hear of somebody hosting travelers because of need. Now, you might host travelers to help them save money if you have some connections with them, or maybe you're already a friend with them, or you might host travelers because there's already some goodwill between you, or you want to increase that goodwill. But rarely is it somebody that is a complete stranger to you that you welcome into your home for a night or a period of nights. However, that was the ordinary practice of hospitality in the ancient church. So as we begin thinking about starting to pivot toward our own practice, we need to recognize that there is a bit of a difference, an important difference, between how it was practiced in the ancient world and now that we have this hospitality industry, how that does need to reshape and redirect some of our own efforts. Now, as Dr. Archerberry compared Jewish, Greek, and Christian hospitality, he noted that there were some very common elements between them. So, for example, bowing to one another, foot washing, providing food, caring for one's animals, giving lodging and protection, things that we see in Abraham as he welcomes the angels into his tent, and also the Lord, or Lot as he welcomes the two angels into his home. We see similar things, Dr. Archerberry indicates, in the Jewish world, the Greek world, and in the Christian world. And so these are common practices. He also notes that each culture recognized the possibility that one was hosting some sort of divine being when hosting a traveler. So this was not merely a biblical concept, but even those who were Greek and worshipped pagan gods believe that this was also a possibility. But he also notes that there were some differences, not just some common elements between these cultures. For example, Greeks, yes, they would show hospitality, but in practice, theirs was a much more lavish hospitality, and they would extend it really to those who could repay them. They wanted to, work their way up in society, and so they would extend hospitality when it would have been beneficial to themselves to do it, not merely to their guests. The Jews, on the other hand, would avoid lavish hospitality, but in practice, they extended it only toward Jewish kinsmen rather than outside the Jewish people. Christians, however, also, as the Jews, avoided lavish hospitality, but he concludes that Christians were excelled in extending it to those who could not repay them, and they would extend it not merely to their own ethnic group, but to other ethnic groups, and often most commonly toward other Christians. So I think that's some helpful context from a scholar in this field. But let's go to some of the primary sources now. Wants to quote a few things from some of the church fathers. And in doing this again, I know that I'm not being exhaustive from the ancient texts, but as I've read on this topic and I've traced down some of the footnotes and things, these are some of the places that I have found to be most helpful. Beginning with a collection of writings called the Apostolic Fathers. These are some of the earliest documents in the post-New Testament Christian era. And we begin with the writing called the Didache, probably my favorite from this time. And what we see with the Didache is that there was this common concern in the ancient Christian church in terms of how to care for traveling preachers, the itinerant preacher. And so the Didache says this: "Let every apostle who comes to you be welcomed as if he were the Lord, but he is not to stay for more than one day, unless there is need, in which case he may stay another. But if he stays 3 days, he is a false prophet." The Didache goes on to warn against those who would request food and money while making prophecies. So in the midst of their prophetic word, so to speak, they would be saying, "Give me money, give me food, thus says the Lord." If you would go on to say something like that, then you were warned against such a person. And so, in other words, what we see here is that there was a initial posture of welcome. So clearly when someone comes to you, it says he should be welcomed as if he were the Lord. So there's this disposition that the ancient Christians had. But then they would examine the one whom they received, and they would use caution because they recognized that there were some who would abuse this practice and would take advantage of it in order to get food, get money, get whatever they could use for themselves. So I think helpful for us. And we'll come back to some lessons a little bit later. A second father that could turn to is the Shepherd of Hermas. Now, this document is, again, very old, but I should give the warning that this has a very unhelpful and unbiblical doctrine of salvation. But it does address hospitality, and so it helps us to think about how the ancients, people, even Christians who had some heterodox beliefs, how they were seeking to apply things. They were speaking about hospitality by reminding us of the fact that we are strangers here on earth. And in this quote, we discover that apparently Christians could leave their earthly home for a time and then come back to their earthly home that they owned and discover that it had been seized by an earthly ruler. And so you'll kind of get that here in this quote from the Shepherd of Hermas. So it speaks about instead of buying things that can be taken from you, it says, instead, buy souls, purchase souls that are in distress, and visit widows and orphans, and spend your wealth and all your possessions on these kinds of fields and houses. For this is why the Master made you rich, so that you might perform these ministries for him. It is much better to purchase fields and possessions and houses of this kind. Remember, it's talking about widows and orphans, which you will find in your own city when you go home to it. So in other words, use your wealth to care for other people, because in doing so, you're purchasing souls. You're bringing them to Christ. If you spend your wealth on earthly goods, well, that those earthly goods could be stolen from you. So much better to extend hospitality. A second place I'd like to turn, not moving on from the Apostolic Fathers, is to the Father Augustine of Hippo. He is a perhaps the greatest father in the Western Church, especially. And I want to paraphrase a quote from him as he was giving, it's called Sermon 61, and commenting on the end of the book of Hebrews. But here's a paraphrase as he speaks about the fellow Christian, the poor traveler, the fellow stranger. He says this: "Acknowledge the duty of hospitality. Thereby some have attained unto God. You take in a stranger, but you are actually his companion on the way, because we are all strangers. The Christian acknowledges that he is a stranger even in his own house and in his own country. For our country is above. We shall no longer be strangers there. We do not abide here. We will leave our homes behind. Therefore, let us do something which cannot pass away, and when we go to our heavenly home, find our good works there. Christ protects that heavenly home. Do not fear losing what you spend on the poor. So again, some similar sorts of themes that we have from the Didache and Shepherd of Hermas, recognizing we are pilgrims, strangers, recognizing others in that way, and so we share our possessions with them, and we look for the true inheritance in heaven above. Now we turn to a contemporary of Augustine of Hippo, but one who lived and served in the East, someone who is analogous, you could say, to Augustine in the West, John Chrysostom in the East. And he is perhaps the most prolific author on the topic of Christian hospitality in the ancient church. He was the Bishop of Constantinople, and he really contributes, I think, quite a lot to some of our reflections on this. Two things he indicates, and I'll get to a couple of his quotes, two themes that are, I think, helpful. One is that he prioritizes helping the poor over formal worship. And it was never, ever to the neglect of formal worship, but he believed that formal worship and gathering around the Lord's table should then lead us to the end of helping the poor and bringing them to our tables. And so he wanted to see that communion with Christ, not merely in formal worship, but to the end, the goal of formal worship, that we commune with Christ in the poor Christian brother or sister. So that's the first theme that I'd like to note as we get into a couple of his quotes. And the second is that he makes this indication of how it's wise and good for a Christian family to set apart a room inside their house, making that a room that's dedicated to Christ. In other words, not merely is it Christ's room, but it's used then to welcome Christ. You welcome the Christian brother or sister and show hospitality. And so Christ is in your house, in other words, when you are showing hospitality. And then he's not in your house, you could say, when you're not showing hospitality. Of course, that's a manner of speaking, and it's trying to take seriously Christ's teaching in Matthew 25. So first quote, this is with respect to the poor Christian and the preference to welcoming Christ there, not merely at the Lord's table. He says this, "Lift up and stretch out your hands, not to heaven, but to the poor. For if you stretch out your hands to the poor, you have reached the summit of heaven. But if you lift up your hands in prayer without sharing with the poor, it is worth nothing. Every family should have a room where Christ is welcomed in the person of the hungry and thirsty stranger. The poor are a greater temple than the sanctuary. This altar, that is the poor, you can raise up anywhere on the street and offer the liturgy at any hour." And so helping the poor is something that is quite connected then in his mind to the worship service and to the liturgy of the Lord's table. He also goes on in Matthew 25, a text that we've spent some time on. He says this, "Do you wish to honor the body of Christ? Do not ignore Christ when he is naked. Do not pay him homage in the temple, clad in silk." He's talking about the church there. "Only then to neglect him outside, where he is cold and ill-clad. He who said, 'This is my body,' is the same who said, 'You saw me hungry and you gave me no food. And whatever you did to the least of my brothers, you did also to me.' What good is it if the Eucharistic table is overloaded with golden chalices when your brother is dying of hunger? Start by satisfying his hunger, and then with what is left, you may adorn the altar or table as well." So again, quite a couple of helpful reflections on welcoming Christ, not merely in formal worship, but in the person of the poor brother or sister. The final quote I would like to read here, I think, adds to this, and it helps in a very practical way, not merely setting aside a room in which to welcome Christ, but in how we welcome the Christian brother or sister. "In every believer and brother, though they be least of all, Christ comes to you. Open your house, take them in. These are the qualities that ought to be in those who welcome strangers: readiness, cheerfulness, liberality. For strangers feel abashed and ashamed, and unless their host shows real joy, they feel slighted and go away. Therefore, set aside a room in your house to which Christ may come. Say, this is Christ's room. This is set apart for him. And so again, just to highlight there, the attitude and how do we welcome those strangers? Well, with readiness, with cheerfulness, and with liberality. The final place that I'd like to turn and reflecting upon the ancient church is to the order of Saint Benedict of Nursia. He published a rule in 529 AD, and a monastic order kind of arose. The monastics prior to Benedict were largely living by themselves as hermits and loners out in the wilderness. But he established a communal monastery. And as he did so, hospitality was a very important part of his monastic rule, and then the, by extension, monastic order that resulted. And they were attempting to really recover an authentic form of Christianity at a time when cultural Christianity was really diluting the practices of the ancient church. And so hospitality was very central there. And so it was so central that within his rule, he describes the life of the monastery as always including guests and visitors. The leader of the monastery, the abbot, was required to always have guests and travelers at his table. There's even an indication, an instruction to the doorkeeper. This was often an elderly resident of the monastery, an elderly monk. And that if anyone knocked at the door, anyone hears a knock, he's supposed to immediately cry out, "Thanks be to God." And then he would go and answer the door with warmth and with love. So you can imagine if you're in your house and you hear somebody knock on your door, just crying out loudly, "Thanks be to God," for whomever is outside that door. And so he also, in his rule, indicates that Christ comes in the person of the stranger, and that honor should be shown to those who share the faith. They are to pray together. And once they pray together, that would indicate then that the stranger is of good intent and then could then receive the kiss of peace and be welcomed into the house. When people are coming and going, they would bow toward each other. They would honor one another. And this was always because Christ was recognized as being in that brother or sister who had arrived. So too, the guests would be asked to pray. And that would indicate then to the monastery that the person was a Christian, a brother or sister, and then welcome to sit with the abbot and to share the table with that leader of the monastery. So anyway, wanted to just mention that that also is an important place to turn as we think about hospitality. They always had food on hand, bedding, clothing for guests to make sure that people were that Christians were welcomed and that they were being hospitable. So in conclusion with this episode, I want to just take away the big picture here that hospitality has been a central practice to the Christian church since the patristics, since the ancient church. We can't replicate everything exactly. We have very different contexts, but we can try to apply these things thoughtfully. A few things that I think we could take away from this is that hospitality should be simple and not lavish. As we seek to welcome people, we don't need to have fancy gourmet meals. We're also not trying to seek earthly gain, but being simple with people and welcoming them is the key. We should show humility and also show joy when we receive somebody into our house. People can feel nervous. They can feel vulnerable by coming into your home, and they could also hope that they're not being inconvenienced to you. And so with these things in mind, we should show a very clear joy at their presence. We might not want to cry out, "Thanks be to God," because that might scare some people, but that's the sort of attitude we should have. We should also be mindful of dangers. We might recall that there were guidelines given to protect against abuse of hospitality, like only allowing someone to stay for so long, being mindful of what they say, what they prophesy, praying with somebody to make sure they are a Christian brother or sister, that they're coming with good intentions. And so we should always be aware there are dangers. We should have hospitality that's spiritual. It's outwardly and openly spiritual, accompanied also with prayer. And the last little takeaway is that hospitality needs space. It needs a place. And so how helpful is it to have a guest room in your house that's set aside, but not really to have a mere guest room set aside for, you know, immediate family that's coming from out of town, although that's great to do, but to recognize that room is really for Christ and that you want Christ to be in your home. And so you want to have that room occupied as much as possible with hospitality. So a few things this week. I hope that it's helpful for you as we continue this series in the practice of Christian hospitality. This has been the Sensory Reform Podcast. Zach Wise with you, pastor of Ascension Reformed Church. Find our other episodes at sensoryreformed.org. Check out Ascension Reformed Church at ascensionreformed.org. And check out our church plant, Christ Reformed Church of Northern Kentucky. Thanks so much and have a great week. Bye-bye.